ABC
Radio,
Brisbane and Queensland.
Streaming now at abc.net.au/Brisbane.
With Kelly Higgins Devine. With 19 of the G20 countries reaffirming their support for the Paris Agreement, former US Vice President Al Gore believes we have reached a tipping point on government attitudes and people's attitudes to climate change. Mr. Gore is in Australia to promote the follow-up to his Oscar-winning documentary, An Inconvenient Truth. It's a decade down the track, and how has the world reacted to the warnings of climate scientists and the intensification of weather events? I had a discussion with Mr. Gore about the G20, Queensland's particular situation when it comes to coal and climate, and his new documentary, An Inconvenient Sequel, Truth to Power.
It's supposed to be 70 degrees today. It's freezing here. Speaking of global warming, we need some global warming. It's freezing.
The most criticized scene in the movie An Inconvenient Truth was showing that the combination of sea level rise and storm surge would flood the 9/11 memorial site. And people said, what a terrible exaggeration.
Hurricane Sandy slammed into New York City last night, flooding the World Trade Center site.
Storms get stronger and more destructive. Watch the water splash off the city. This is global warming.
I feel so scared. Sorry.
Despair can be paralyzing, but this to me is the most exciting new development. We're seeing a tremendous amount of positive change. The basis is there, but it's still not enough.
It's crunch time at the climate change conference in Paris.
Still some really tough negotiations going on.
What would it take to shift to renewables? I'm talking about breaking the impasse. Virtually every nation in the entire world agreed to get to zero greenhouse emissions. It is unprecedented.
It's time to put America first. That includes a promise to cancel billions in climate change spending. Our plan will end the EPA.
The next generation would be justified in looking back at us and asking, what were you thinking? Couldn't you hear what the scientists were saying? Couldn't you hear what Mother Nature was screaming at you?
This movement is in the tradition of every great movement that has advanced humankind.
We're not going to recognize it. We don't want to discuss it.
It is right to save humanity. It is wrong to pollute this earth. It is right to give hope to the future generation.
Don't let anybody tell you that we're going to get on rocket ships and live on Mars. This is our home.
Al Gore, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Kelly. Thank you for the interview.
You're welcome. It's a decade since An Inconvenient Truth was released. Have we as a planet moved too slowly to heed these warnings of climate scientists? Are we actually too late?
We're not too late. At least the vast majority of scientists tell us that we certainly still do have time to avoid the most catastrophic consequences that we have to avoid. Some damage, regrettably, has been done, but we still have time. We were slow to respond, yes, but a famous economist once said, things take longer to happen than you think they will, and then they happen much faster than you thought they could. I think we're in that second phase now.
You are an optimist by nature, from what I can tell. That comes through strongly in the latest documentary, An Inconvenient Sequel, Truth to Power, and in the first one as well. But I was reading an article the other day on climate scientists and some of them who were seriously thinking about not having children because of what they see coming. How do you sustain this optimism that humanity will eventually do the right thing by itself?
Well, I think the climate movement should be seen in the context of other great moral causes that we have confronted in history, the abolition movement, the struggle for women's suffrage and women's equality, and the civil rights movement in my country, and the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa, more recently the gay rights movement. All of these movements have seemed impossible at times and have met with ferocious resistance until they boil down to a simple choice between what's right and what's wrong. And once that choice comes clearly into view, the outcome is foreordained. And I think we're at that moment, that tipping point for the climate movement right now.
Are we actually there? I mean, is there enough support worldwide to actually get renewables across the line?
Well, yes, I think the answer to that question is yes. And the best evidence to support that conclusion is at the Paris Agreement a year ago, December, virtually every nation in the entire world agreed to go to a net zero global warming pollution by 2050 or as soon thereafter as possible. And even though Donald Trump made an announcement that he would like to withdraw the U.S., all the other nations have held firm and many have doubled down on their commitments. For example, India has canceled hundreds of coal-powered generating plants and has announced that within just a dozen years or so, every car and truck in India is going to have to be an electric vehicle. China similarly reduced its coal use 3 years running and actually is speeding up the transition to renewables. So I think that the optimism is justified, but we have to keep at it because it is an enormous challenge.
Well, we see you in the movie talking with India's energy minister, who quite rightly makes the point about these coal-fired plants that they were at the time planning, 400 of them planning to bring online, that they're now no longer planning to do so, but makes the point that, well, it's all right for developed countries to say you can't do that because it'll destroy the planet when we've been doing it for 150 years. And it was interesting to watch that process of you finding out what the real resistance is, and it wasn't India's resistance, it was the resistance of banks to give them a good interest rate to actually invest in renewables. How much of the past 10 years of yours has been finding out where the resistance is and overcoming that real sticking point?
Well, it's been an educational process for me, for sure. And if you keep working at anything, you're going to learn more about how to solve the deeper underlying problems. And you can certainly understand the point of view being expressed by the Indian government in the movie. It's easy to understand. But now we have these new technologies that allow them to leapfrog over the old dirty approaches on which the West based its development. If we had those available back then, we would have leapfrogged over the air pollution ourselves. But now, you take the example of mobile phones. Rather than simply building the kind of landline network that we built in the U.S. and in Australia, now they just went straight to the mobile phones. And now in my home in the United States, I don't even use my landline telephone anymore. It's whenever it rings, it's a telemarketer anyway, and I'm thinking about having it taken out. So so they're a step ahead of us in some ways.
Yeah. And look, I'm a little jealous of South Australia at the moment. Elon Musk is building them the largest lithium-ion battery ever built so far to help with their energy problems, done in 100 days or it's free. For my way of thinking, this is that first big step where someone goes, all right, let's do it for a state, for a big population, and see how it runs. I believe you know Elon Musk.
Very well. He's a very good friend. I've worked with him in the past, and I really admire his gumption. He was doubted when he claimed that he could launch all electric cars in the U.S., and now his company, Tesla, has a value that's equal to Ford and General Motors, and just in a few short years. It's not wise to bet against him. But I want to give credit to the premier and the government of South Australia for leading the world. It's really quite inspiring.
Mm. One of the real issues we have here in Queensland is that a great number of people who will be listening to you and me today make their living, they feed their families, pay their bills because of the job and jobs that coal mining brings to this state. It's a huge source of revenue for our government as well. How do we make this transition? And this is a worldwide problem, I'd imagine, for those communities in the same problem. How do we do this without killing off communities?
Yeah, it requires leadership, and I think the leadership you're seeing in Queensland is really extremely impressive. And announcing that Queensland is going to net zero by 2050 is really incredible. I'll tell you a quick story from my own part of the country, of the U.S. Actually, my neighbor to the north, Kentucky, is the heart of coal country. They have a famous coal museum there, and they just retrofitted the whole museum to run on solar power because the electricity is so much cheaper. A second quick story, if I might. There are now in the U.S. twice as many jobs in solar as in coal, and the solar jobs are growing 17 times faster than all the other jobs in the economy. In fact, the job growth in the renewable sector is the fastest job growth of any economic sector all over the world. It's really a way to put people back to work. And of course, you have to pay careful attention to the transition issues. And I'm very impressed with the way the Queensland government is handling it.
Because this is a nation, as you know, we are making decisions at the moment about whether or not to, the Adani coal mine, for example. And there are many people opposed to it because of what it might do to the Great Barrier Reef. Many people who want it because of the jobs and the money that will be generated. Can we have both, do you think, Al Gore?
Well, in my personal opinion, it's time to move on to the more exciting forms of energy that are becoming not only available but much more advantageous. And if you look at the economic value of the Great Barrier Reef, not least to Queensland, then you have to really ask hard questions about what can be done to protect it. And the emissions from fossil fuels damage it in two ways. Of course, 90% of all the extra heat energy being trapped by the global warming pollution is going into the oceans and heating them up, especially around Australia, because it's the largest island continent in the world. But the second factor is 30% of all that CO2 goes into the ocean water and makes it more acidic. It's 30% more acid today than just a few decades ago. And both of those things are damaging the Great Barrier Reef. And of course, the cyclones may not be more numerous, but the ones that hit are bigger and more destructive now. And the droughts come more frequently and strike more deeply when they do. The sea level rise issues are causing problems already. And that's only the beginning of what we would face if we don't get this under control. So if we can create a lot more jobs by accelerating this transition to clean energy, it seems to me to be the obvious choice.
One of the parts of the documentary, Truth to Power, that I really enjoyed was you going into what the mayor of that region called, you know, it was the heartland of red territory, of conservative Republican territory. He's a conservative Republican, you know, his voters are, and yet they'd made a commitment, I believe it was, to go to 30% by 2030, and they were already at 90 or whatever that figure was. It was very, very high. And it seemed to me that part of it was saying, you know what, even if governments, as you've talked about Trump, even if governments say, no, we're not going to, economics the power of people to go, you know what, polluting the air actually doesn't make sense, does it? Which is what this bloke was saying. That is turning the tide. It's not just macro, it's people acting on a micro level as well.
Absolutely. And that city claims to be the most conservative Republican city in the conservative Republican state of Texas. And since the movie was completed, they have now reached their goal of being 100% based on renewable energy. And one of the secrets I always thought after going to visit is that the mayor of that city happens to be a certified public accountant, and he's very good with numbers, and he just sketched out how much money his citizens were going to save if they got off fossil fuels and went all the way to renewables, and he said, let's do it. And now they're more competitive, and they have more jobs, and the air is cleaner, and they're very happy about it.
Al Gore, in 10 years, when the third documentary of what seems like an obvious trilogy to me is being screened, what do you realistically think you'll be saying?
Well, without affirming your assumption of another, I'm still waiting for the release of this one. I'm very heartened by the wonderful reaction and the pre-screenings, by the way. But 10 years from now, whether there's another movie or not, I hope that we will be well on the other side of this transition, and that we can look at our children and say with all sincerity, we've done the right thing, and your lives are going to be better than ours. We're not going to continue destroying the prospects for your future. And I think we're going to feel pretty good about that.
Former U.S. Vice President Al Gore, thank you very much.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.
This is ABC Radio Brisbane and Queensland.